Need some motivation on your Chinese business endeavour? May be curious about what the Chinese business environment is all about? Or want to laugh out loud listening to war stories on the ground in China? Then this is your show, China Business Cast.
All right, thank you everybody for tuning in to another China Business Cast. It is the holiday seasons, and you know, it's always a fun time in China or anywhere around the world, of course. But there's so many different cultures, and we have different cultures even in this show today. So I'm Christian. I've grown up Christian, Catholic, and Northeast American, Connecticut and New York, New Jersey. So it's always tough for me being over in China during the Christmas holidays. Definitely no snow here in South China where I'm at, and also not much. I mean, I guess actually they're getting to have more and more Christmas music in malls because I guess it gets sales up of, product sales, but there's a normal working day in China. It's not a holiday. So of course, usually companies respect Westerners that celebrate Christmas and they'll let them take the day off. But you can go to any restaurant or store or bank or do business in offices on Christmas Day, which actually I have done in certain times. Just a little fun fact for you guys that haven't been over here for the Christmas holiday. It's a normal working day. And how about you, Shlomo? You have your holidays here now, right?
Yeah, I'm not so much celebrating Christmas, but when this show will air, it will be just after Hanukkah. And this time I'm celebrating half of it in America and half of it in Israel. But obviously nobody celebrates Hanukkah in Beijing, but I celebrate a few Hanukkahs there with the Jewish Center. It's a lot of fun with all the community, and you get to light a large menorah there with the community, and we got special food. It's a kind of a deep fried donuts filled with different types of jam in them, and these are really good. My wife loves them. So that's basically how you celebrate this in Beijing. And when you're with family, then you do it all together. It lasts for 8 days and you do it every night. So that's a fun one. And longer than Christmas.
Awesome. I want to try some of those donuts there, or I'm definitely not calling it the right thing.
Go to the Jewish Center in Shenzhen. I'm sure they have it.
Cool. Awesome. And some business announcements. Yeah, we mentioned in our last show, we're opening up a mastermind for China Business Cast. And we have already gotten some interest and some emails and some applications. So we're really excited. Applications are still open, so it's not too late. You can head on over to chinabusinesscast.com/mastermind. And we have all the information. It's going to be a paid call and forum. So we'll give you all the information and what you're going to get and how it's going to work. Just check out that link. And you have until the end of 2015. We are going to close applications on December 31st. So you still have a couple of more weeks. But we, of course, would love to have you apply sooner than later. We will be actively contacting people as they apply and asking some more questions, setting up potentially some calls. So yeah, Shlomo, are you excited? I'm pretty excited about that.
I'm very excited about this. And just to mention again that we're still looking for a name. So if your name for this mastermind group is chosen, you get a 1 month free for that. So we will let, obviously, know ahead of time. So keep sending your names, your suggested names as well for that. And the other announcement is that you probably noticed that we have sponsors now on the show, put some of them in, and we still have open slots for more and for future shows. So if you want to apply for that, please send an email either to Mike or myself. That would be mike@chinabusinesscast.com or shlomo@chinabusinesscast.com. And we'll get back to you with all the information needed.
Yep. It's exciting times here at China Business Cast.
A lot of changes
and getting started on the new year is right. So we always appreciate any feedback about it. And we want to hear from you guys. It's what makes the show great. All right. And now for our featured guest for this episode, we have with us Gregory Vandenberg. He is the CEO at Meisai in Beijing, which is a financial services company that is doing a lot in technology and fintech in China for
That's
investing.
A hot topic in China.
Very, very hot. And he, I think both Shlomo and I were very, very grateful that he was sharing so openly about a lot of different ways to even do this stuff yourself in China. He's talking about some of the government agencies and processes and people and other things. So I think it's a really valuable one. You guys should bring your notebooks and pens out to take some notes. And let's do it, Shlomo. You ready?
I'm ready. Let's go.
All right. Looking for other China business podcasts? Then check out limitlesslaowai.com, where you'll discover engaging interviews with international business leaders all around the country. Tune in to find success faster in China.
So hello, everybody, and welcome to China Business Cast. We have Mike and myself here, Shlomo, hosting Greg Vandenberg. He's coming from a very, very exciting fintech startup in Beijing. And it's very exciting because fintech is a hot topic now in China. And I'm looking forward to hear more about it from Greg. Greg, you want to say a few words about Meetai and what you guys are doing, and then we'll get to the questions?
Sure. First of all, thanks so much, Shlomo and Mike, for inviting me. It's a real pleasure and honor to be on your show. Meetai is an automated investment service, so-called robo-advisor. What we basically do is our customers can, with a few clicks of a button, invest in an diversified portfolio of low-cost index funds that tracks different asset classes, different countries. And we do this without the high minimum fees of a private bank. And what is more is that every single day that you are a customer with us, we manage that money for you. What this means basically is we rebalance your portfolio, we reinvest your dividends, et cetera, et cetera. In the United States, listeners might probably have heard about Wealthfront or Betterment. In the UK, you have Nutmeg. And so we are the first ones and largest robo-advisor currently in China.
Awesome.
Great, great, great to have you. Yeah, I've heard of those other companies too, and it's definitely an exciting field. So how did you get started in this business?
That's a good question. My background, I'm originally from Belgium, and my first job was at Morgan Stanley in Hong Kong on private wealth management, covering mostly Chinese people, high net worth individuals. And then I also worked for a hedge fund and several other companies. And then I moved to China to follow my MBA at the Cheng Kung Graduate School of Business. When I was there, and that was in 2012, I noticed that there is a huge new emerging group of people in China that have certain investment needs that are currently not covered. This is an affluent class. This is a group of people that has a discretionary income. These are people that cannot access private banks or financial advisors because in China, unlike the rest of the world, you need to have at least around $5 to $10 million liquid to become part of a private bank. At the same time, they have too much money to basically access or put their entire money in a simple money market fund or a bond fund. And so this opportunity, when you think about a company called Meetai that creates baskets of ETFs that are automatically managed for that particular group of people. So what happened is we set up the company in 2013. At the end of 2013, won Beijing Tech Hive, which is a competition at that time was done with Microsoft Ventures. We got first prize and also the prize for the audience. And after that, several angel investors were interested in investing. And then we invested in ourselves. And now we have a team of around 30 people. We're based in Beijing. We have one institutional investor. We're raising another round as we speak. We were on the front page of the Financial Times website 2 days ago. So everything is going well.
Greg, I want you told us a little about your career, and I want you to tell us a little bit more about that moment that you're saying, I don't want to do more corporate. I'm going to do a startup in this China place where I'm not sure about anything.
Yeah, I think that, to be honest, it wasn't that conscious of a decision. I did not come to China to set up a business at first. I came to China with a very open mind. And what happened is the following. I had a roommate at that time during the MBA who was Chinese, who also went to the same school, was around 37 years old. And he was an entrepreneur from Shenzhen. And he told me this amazing story how he lost 1 million RMB investing in a product that he bought from a commercial bank. And he lost almost the entire money. This was money that was normally being used to pay his son's college education that they've saved up for many, many years. And all of a sudden, everything was gone. Wow. So I looked into this product. And what we noticed is that it's very leveraged. A lot of very complicated leverage constructions that actually should not be in the hands of retail investors. And so he asked me then, so what should I do now with my money? So ETFs are exchange-traded funds or funds that track particular indices. So for example, the NASDAQ or the Shanghai Stock Exchange or the S&P 500. And so they exist in China as well. And they have very, very low fees, less than 1%, whereas an actively managed fund charges easily in China 2 to 3% management fee. There's often a subscription fee and other fees involved. So what I then did is I created this basket for him, and he seemed to like it. His wife seemed to like it. His uncle seemed to like it. His, you know, cousins seemed to like it. His neighbors seemed to like it. And before I knew it, I saw there was a business in this particular field. And so the other question was how to automate it, because I was still a student in MBA school. And so I then, I don't have an engineering background as such, although my father is an engineer. And so what it is, we found out whether it's legal to put this on an application on a smartphone, as well as got a professor involved, who was at that time my professor and also a co-founder of the company, who at that time was working for Betterment. And we found out whether it's legal, whether it was possible. And then we got a team together to build it. That's basically how it happens. So to answer your question, I never intended to build a startup. I kind of rolled into it from a favor I did for a roommate. And then you bump into something and you see it works. And you got validated by investors as well after that particular competition that we took part in. And so it was never for me a conscious decision of, I'm going to become an entrepreneur now. It was more like, oh, it seems that I am an entrepreneur.
That's a great story. That's really a great story.
Yeah, cool. All right. So I'm just wondering, you know, I think some of the hottest topics in, you know, at least the international news that probably a lot of people are reading is the stock market doubled. And then is this in China stocks or is this in international stocks or is it matter? And then because there was a huge crash after the stock, you know, stocks in China doubled and then they crashed in like 6 months. So is that affecting your business in positively, negatively or not at all? Or
it is affecting our business in a positive way. So what we do is we give people not a China portfolio, but a globally diversified portfolio. So what this means is that our portfolio did better than domestic portfolios because NASDAQ, S&P 500, and all these other exchanges, as well as different asset classes, didn't go through that huge volatility that Chinese stocks went through in the last 9 months. So for us, this is all very, very good. It's a bit like the perfect storm that happened.
Awesome. That's great then. Good for you.
Because a year ago, imagine, a lot of times you hear people talk about the casino mentality a lot of Chinese investors have, which is true for a certain part of the population. But one thing to bear in mind is that almost every market you go, around 25% of the people are so-called active investors. So these are people that have the time and have the idea that they can beat the market and actively select their portfolios, manage their portfolios, and take bets on in terms of direction, in terms of timing, etc. 75% of any population you go worldwide more or less are passive investors. So these are people that just invest and don't really take any directional or timing view on what they do on a weekly or monthly or day-to-day basis. So we target the second group, which in China now is mostly invested not in stocks but in real estate. So what we now see is that the difference between the crash of 2008 in China and the correction or crash now is that now real estate is no alternative anymore. So back in 2008, a lot of people burnt their shirt in stocks and then decided to say, okay, I'm going to get out of stocks or other asset classes and I'll go into real estate. And at that time, the real estate price in China was considerably lower than international standard. And so going into real estate in hindsight was definitely one of the best investments to do. However, the situation now is very different. Real estate in the last several years, depending on which city you go to, has very low returns or sometimes even returns. The price per square meter in Beijing is very much similar to the price you get internationally. So people realize more and more that the asset class for them to invest in the last 30 years is not going to be the asset class for them to be investing in the next 30 years. And so we see a lot of people moving from real estate into market investing. And these are people that are not generally active investors. These are busy people. We're talking about lawyers, doctors, people who work for PE, people who work for VC, people that generally do not have the time to every month or every week look at their portfolio, do some trades, follow it on their smartphone. And that's a trend that will impact the worldwide asset market to a very, very large extent. And we see a lot of opportunity in that particular field.
So, Greg, I personally like the whole thing of personal finance very much. And I follow on what's going on in fintech, mainly in America, because this is where things still happen first. And I wonder what's going on in China. I mean, certainly in Israel, we're behind because it's a small market. So there aren't as good products as in America for certain apps that automate your savings or automate your investments. And I wonder, except of you guys, if there's still more space for fintech startups or fintech companies in China. After all, it's a heavy regulated market, and I don't know if you can really do a lot here.
That's a very good question, Shlomo. I think it's minute one of day one in so many ways in terms of fintech, not just in China, but worldwide. I think personally, there are many more opportunities in China in terms of fintech, because of a variety of reasons. The main one is that people are only starting to invest now. Before that, there wasn't really that culture, just because the people didn't have the disposable income to go to the markets. And so before we start, I have to say that fintech is very, very broad. So fintech could be Bitcoin, could be third-party payment channels, could be security, could be helping banks on the B2B side. The niche that we are in is only personal wealth management. And in that category, we have seen three waves, basically three revolutions. And the first wave was so-called Internet Investing 1.0. What this is, it started back in 1999 when PayPal put a money market fund on their platform. This fund grew to more than $1.5 billion under management. And then 2011, the fund went bust because of a problem it had. And PayPal decided to stop at the fund. And the same thing happened with Capital One and then several other entities. Now, in China, China has only started doing something similar to that about 3 years ago. The biggest entity doing that is Alibaba. So they have a fund that is managed by an asset management company called Tianhong, and they call that Yuebao. This fund grew in less than 2 years into the second largest money market fund in the world. They have more than $80 billion under management at one point. The way it works, so you're right, it's mostly in America that these particular waves start, on the internet investing side at least. But in China, because think about it this way. This is a country with no vanguard, no fidelity, none of these household names, and there are no real Chinese equivalents of these companies. So because before that, people did not have the discretionary capital to invest. So there was no need for these companies. So it's a blue ocean in many ways. The second wave that we see in this personal wealth management or internet investing is finance 2.0, which has everything to do with connecting people. For example, peer-to-peer on the fixed income side, I connect borrowers with lenders. So in the US, I'm sure all of you have heard about Funding Circle or Lending Club, et cetera,
yes.
Prosper. These are well-known companies. In China, you have a lot of them, and they're very big. So in China, you have about 2,500 peer-to-peer companies. Jianrong, Renmendai, Jimuhezi, et cetera, are some of the more known ones. Many of them are valued close or above $1 billion. And most of these companies are only 5 years old or less. The reason why it's still day one in so many ways is that in terms of peer-to-peer, Tencent did a research into it, and they found out that the population in China investing into peer-to-peer is less than 10 million people of a population of 1.4 billion people. So it's really a very, very small fraction of the population that drives this big, big industry. Mm-hmm. On the public market side, there is also the second wave, and this is all about social trading. So you probably heard about eToro or Trade Hero. So basically a social network of people that are traders, and then a group of people that follow these particular traders and invest according to what the other traders invest in. In China, this was possible, but however, the CSRC, which is the regulator, this year is breaking down on this and rendered these items of particular structures that many of these apps used illegal. So they have suffered quite a lot of legal issues in the past few months because of margin that was used, because of pooled accounts that they've used that were not according to the CSRC's guidelines. And the regulator as such in China has a very difficult job because the landscape is growing and changing so fast. And it's very difficult as a regulator to really get accustomed to that particular pace of change. So we talk a lot to the regulators. And there's a lot of education from both ways. And the good thing is we have the same incentive. So the regulator in China as well, they want people to access the market, but in a way that ensures them to have a stable long-term growth. That's basically what's going on in China. Now, what happened then, the third wave of internet investing, so-called Finance 3.0, is started in 2010 when in May, Betterment launched. And so Betterment was the first robo-advisor that provided people with a service of managing people's broker account, individual broker account, and maintaining a certain investment plan of different ETFs, 10% NASDAQ, 5% S&P 500, 20% bonds, etc., and tailor make these portfolios according to people's risk tolerance level. Another well-known one is Wealthfront that launched in December 2011. Both of these companies now manage around $2.5 billion each. This is the third wave. And these so-called robo-advisors, they are categorized as follows. First of all, they design a portfolio and manage it in your broker account. Secondly, you buy everything via them, so you don't need third-party setups, et cetera, et cetera. And thirdly, this is a wave that in China is still has started, and we are the first ones doing this particular wave.
Let's be honest, understanding the business environment in China isn't simple, nor is it for the faint of heart. With China still topping the ranks as a destination for global expansion, demand for tried and true strategies to foster success in the China market are at an all-time high. What if you could glean wisdom, perspective, experience, and understanding by hearing from professionals with combined decades of success in China? Well, that's exactly what Limitless Laowai Business Podcasts are all about. Longtime expat and entrepreneur Ali Mona sits with seasoned international residents all over the country to capture their stories of successes, failures, tips, and tricks for living and working well in China. With over 150 shows already launched, covering topics ranging from cross-culture management to expat finance, startup law to effective job search and training, and so much more, Limitless Laowai podcast will give you an advantage you need to find success faster. Learn more at www.limitlesslaowai.com. That's Limitless, LAOWAI.com. Maybe it's my turn for a question. I think some of the listeners are probably sitting there wondering, you know, before we start recording, of course, Chinese are welcome to listen. But of course, this is English, and most of this is going to be for Westerners. So you're Dutch, I assume. Right,
Belgium.
Sorry, excuse me.
It's okay.
Try my best there. I'm just an ignorant American, so I don't, you know,
You like saying that. You should stop saying that.
I make fun of myself. This is how I get through my day. So this is really amazing to me. You're doing a financial services company inside of China as a Westerner. I'm sure people are thinking a lot of the regulations of both internet and finance inside of China, which is probably it's probably a massive long answer for you, but maybe try to give us some of the highlights of how you're able to do that.
In terms of regulatory, you mean?
I guess just in general. I mean, I know just for websites, you need, of course, you have a company set up for the ICP, and then, but yeah, regulatory, I think, is more for finance, because I've always heard, you know, is this considered banks? Because I think banks a lot of times have to have. Or maybe you can talk about your structure, or maybe you have local partners too, or maybe we have a few questions here, but how are you able to get through the local environment of, you know, banking, finance, internet in China? It's very, very interesting.
Greg, I think basically for listeners here, it's kind of, you know, finance is, as I said, highly, highly regulated category. And it seems like, you know, you're dealing with the hardest thing here. It's like people don't even know how to start or what are the regulations.
Yes. In terms of structure, so we are a Chinese company that has a similar structure to, you know, the way Baidu is structured or Tencent, et cetera. Our key investor is a Chinese investor that is called Crystal Stream. They're backed by Hillhouse Capital, which is a $20 billion fund that's very known in China. So that helps. I think it's important in terms of VC, depending on what market you want to target, to have a local VC if you want to target the local markets. So the choice of VC is very important. In terms of regulation, so let me start saying by the following. China's regulatory system or legal system works with a whitelist rather than a blacklist. So what this means is that in the rest of the world, everything is per definition legal except what is restricted on the blacklist, insider trading, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In China, it works the other way around, which says everything per definition is illegal except everything which is on a whitelist. This makes it very complex, of course, because as I said, the regulator in China has a very difficult job. It has to ensure that the markets can grow and that innovation can happen, but at the same time has to make sure that bad things do not happen and investors protect it. And so the rate at which they have to research things and add things to the whitelist is very, very difficult to maintain. In China, in terms of fintech, there are three large regulatory bodies. So unlike the SEC in the United States, China has several ones. One is the CBRC, so the Chinese Banking Regulatory Commission, I think that's what it stands for. It charts everything to do that has with deposits, borrowing, lending, and banking as such. So for people in the peer-to-peer industry or P2B industry, that is the regulator that you have to deal with. And so at the beginning, when all these peer-to-peer companies started, the regulator clearly said, this is illegal. Now, the regulator didn't take action. So what it means is the regulator never went actively, initially at least, after companies operating a peer-to-peer model. What this meant, though, is that deposits with these companies were not guaranteed, as is your bank deposit. So there's no government guarantee for it. What is happening now, though, is that after so many years, and peer-to-peer, by the way, is quite old in China. You have Credit Ease that already started in 2007, I think, or 2006 with this offline peer-to-peer, that those people gradually become more and more regulated. Now, I would say peer-to-peer is still in a certain gray zone, but the regulator at least offers a lot of help insights and encourages the largest peer-to-peer companies to cooperate with banks to guarantee deposits or to do other items with banks. And probably what most people think is eventually they will start issuing banking licenses or certain particular sort of borrowing and lending licenses to the largest peer-to-peer companies. On the insurance side, you have the CIRC, so the Chinese Insurance Regulatory Commission. Insurance is very, very highly regulated. It's very difficult to do anything there. And so you don't see that many startups tackling that, except in specialized fields such as car insurance or iPhone repair insurance, et cetera. So these other areas are not as regulated or are not called insurance. But if you want to go into casualty insurance or something like that, it's relatively difficult as a startup. I wouldn't say it's impossible, but so far we haven't seen that many things. Everything to do with public markets falls under the CSRC, China Securities Regulatory Commission. And so we fall under them. People that work there are very smart. Some of the smartest people that I've known work for the regulator. And as I said, they have a very difficult job. CSRC allowed relatively certain things that, for example, were not allowed in the United States, things with pooled accounts or certain margin. Now they're getting much, much stricter. And so it's very, very difficult to stay within the limits. And sometimes they even become too strict so that it restricts growth. But again, they have a very difficult job. And so the problem as a startup that you will face and that many of the listeners will face is that how do I position myself in the whole regulatory framework? Because you have to make a choice. You either say, I go into an area that I know is not within the realm of the regulator, I'm not on the whitelist, but I assume that at some point, such as what happened to peer-to-peer or some parts of peer-to-peer, the regulator will not take action and you know, go to my company, et cetera, but will create a regulatory framework about what I'm doing. That's probably a good place to be because it means that it's a place where probably not current incumbents are, and a place that there's demand for as well, and therefore the regulator will create a legal framework for. On our side, so we do passive investing. It's relatively non-funky in terms of finance. So we don't use leverage, we don't use options, we don't use futures. So as such, we are in the white area of the CSRC. That is sort of the place where we are. We just do passive investing. You just get the market return. We have no view. We don't advise you. We have no direction, et cetera, et cetera. So
okay,
that's basically in a sketch of how the regulatory framework works. And then I think on a foreign part, this is probably something that a lot of you who are not Chinese are thinking about, is that I truly believe that the reason why they're not that many foreign successful entrepreneurs in China is to do with what is out of the building, i.e. the air. I know a lot of people who could have become very, very successful, but for certain family reasons or environmental reasons, decided to leave. If you're an entrepreneur, you have to make a commitment for several years. And for a lot of people, especially those who have children, that's quite a hard commitment. If the alternative is a place with a lot of clean air. And I think this has caused really a massive foreign brain drain, or even a brain drain amongst the Chinese who have a foreign passport or the ability to work somewhere else. And this is definitely a trend that we see. A lot of people have moved back to Silicon Valley for those reasons just mentioned.
Cool.
But there are quite a few people like Dianrong, for example, one of the largest peer-to-peer companies. It was Saul, one of the co-founders of, I think, Lending Club. He's doing really well here. Jimbox has an American co-founder. There's Fritz Demopoulos, of course, or the Chunar.
Yeah.
So there are, you know, the ones that are there did actually extremely well, right? Are either the market leader or one of the market leaders in their particular field. For example, the largest peer-to-peer or money market sort of firm is a company backed by Ping An called Lufax. And it's an American guy who had a lot of experience in Taiwan. His name is Greg as well, who runs that firm. And it's an entirely 100% Chinese-focused company that's extremely big. So I would definitely say it's actually, it's a great place to be, especially now for foreigners, because nowadays Chinese society is transforming and there is a particular group of people that are very similar to what I call the international standard. So these are a lot of returnees, so people who studied abroad or worked abroad that are coming back. As well as since more and more Chinese get in the higher income brackets, so the upper side of the middle class, they want different things out of their life. They want experiences, they travel globally, they have very international tastes. And look at the success of Uber in that particular class, right? I think the success of Uber really shows that it's possible with a foreign mindset or as a foreign company or as a group of foreigners to become really, really successful in China, specifically for that particular class.
And it's still not easy for them.
Oh, it's not easy for anyone. It's not easy for Didi Kuaidi. It's not easy for, yeah, it still remains a technology world and it's still China. So,
right. Greg, I got to ask you a personal what if question. So you said that you really never meant to do a startup or a fintech startup in China, you just happen to just flow into this. So what you would have done if you weren't doing a fintech startup instead?
That's a good question.
You'd keep going with school, maybe.
No, I mean, to be honest, I always had the idea that one day I'll have my own business. I just never thought life would play out like this. I knew I would have something to do with China, though, because when you're in Hong Kong or when you do something with emerging markets, you notice that China definitely is a driver and China is taking over as the center of the world in sort of our lifetime. But what exactly I would do differently, something that has to do with catching that particular wave. And since I have a finance background, something in finance or fintech probably has a high likelihood. Mm-hmm.
I remember that I think it was 2 years ago when I met you and we spoke, you were in a little kind of different mindset or you know, just starting with this. That sounded then very, very exciting. I remember, I think it was when you won the Tech Hive. I think it was around that time. So that was really cool seeing this transition happening and seeing how you're doing right now and how much you've done in those around 2 years.
Thank you. It's been exciting. I must say, we have a great team as well. It's really great that, you know, with a group of people that we've been through all this and we're expanding and it's really, really great.
Pine was speaking at the meetup yesterday, by the way. It was really good.
Excellent.
Yeah.
What did he talk about?
He spoke about design. That's his thing. Gave us some example from the previous startup following after at that time, which didn't succeed, but kind of giving all kinds of design examples and stuff like that. People ask questions. It was really, really, really nice.
Great.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah. So thanks so much, Greg. I think you've definitely gotten me a lot of new insights about China, even though, you know, I think Shlomo and I have been here a while. There's always new things to learn. And what's the best way people, you know, want to bombard your email box or your social media or your websites? How can they find you online?
Great. We are on LinkedIn. So just type in Meetsa Mikai, which is M-I-C-A-I. You can always send me an email at greg@meetsai.io. And our website is meetsaiapp.com.
Got it. Okay, and we'll also put that in the show notes too, so people can get it. And so you were saying about sticking here for the long term, for China's success, which I've always told people as well. Is there an average number of years or decades or what? What are you thinking?
I'm not sure. We don't know what is happening, but what I can say is this, is that I truly think that people in sort of 100 years time or 50 years time will look back through this particular period, like 2010 to 2020, 25, as I think the golden years in terms of entrepreneurship in China, specifically focused on the service sector. I think in the next 10 years, you will see small teams of people who are now, working on some fashion idea or some consulting idea, really growing to become the next Prada, the next Louis Vuitton, the next McKinsey, the next BCG, the next Goldman Sachs. I truly believe that. And there's a lot of talent here. And it's really an exciting time to be.
Very inspiring. Yeah, very inspiring. So thanks so much for the interview. And I'm sure that a lot of listeners are going to get a lot of benefits. So appreciate it so much. Your time is very valuable. And we'll let you get back to your fintech love and work and everything. So good luck with you and your business.
My pleasure. And thanks so much, Mike and Shlomo, for inviting me.
Doing business in China is a complex world. You can quickly feel alone and lost in its maze. But don't worry. China Business Cast is here for you. Sign up for our newsletter and regular updates on our website at www.chinabusinesscast.com. Thanks for tuning in.